How It Began, Part 1. Every adventure begins with taking the first step, or in this instance, the first flight, a long-haul flight. The moment I boarded the Boeing 707 at Heathrow on January the 3rd, 1969, I felt a twinge of excitement, bolstered by feelings of genuine altruism. Chris and I were bound for Bangkok and from there to Vientiane, capital city of the small, war-torn country of Laos, right next door to Vietnam. Catching the BOAC flight had been a bit of a scramble. It was my first experience of Heathrow. Mum and Dad and my grandmother had come with me to see me off, already delayed by an unexpected closure of the M4 from Reading due to an accident. We then went to the wrong terminal until I found a rather anxious Chris at the check-in. The plane stopped three or four times en route. It was about one-third full, and we had plenty of opportunity to stroll around, chatting with fellow travellers and hearing about the adventures they were embarking on. It felt like a contemporary Canterbury Tales scenario as we swapped our stories. Onboard entertainment in those days was limited to a single audio channel, so we found ways to amuse ourselves to pass the time. It also provided opportunity for Chris and me to get better acquainted. Chris Wright was from York, where his family ran their butcher's business. He was a graduate in electronic engineering from Southampton University, and it seemed like we would get on well together. Every airport en route had its own flavour, but one that left the most indelible impression was Bombay. There, a bunch of coolies tried to impress us with their offerings of soft drink bottles, Sprite, Fanta, Coke, the contents of which were barely discernible. Their bottles were chipped white with wear. Dawn over the Ganges was unforgettable, as the eastern sky showed off a kaleidoscope of colour, all the colours of the rainbow. In Bangkok, we were taken to a hotel to get some rest before taking the evening Royal Air Lao flight to Vientiane. Flight attendants in long silk skirts gave us candies before takeoff. As we lost height over Thailand and neared the Lao capital, my heart sank. It felt as though we were approaching one of the furthest flung, godforsaken places on earth. Looking down from my window seat, the ground below looked red and scorched. This impression was further enhanced by the setting sun gradually disappearing from sight beneath a heavy dark cloud of pollution, brought on by burning off the rice fields, I later learned. Our mission was to work at Lao National Radio, a joint Colombo Plan aid project supported by the British, Australian and German governments. Chris and I were going as volunteers with VSO, that's Voluntary Service Overseas. Our brief was to provide basic electronics training to Lao technicians and assist in engineering works as needed. When we landed and disembarked, a small band of volunteers came out to greet us. It felt as though we'd reached the last outpost on Earth, and they had turned out to welcome this tangible contact with home. Most of them were there as teachers. Some of them were to go on to attain high-ranking jobs in the diplomatic service and the UN. Several years later, while I was in Phnom Penh, I was to meet up with one of them, Paul Redicliffe, the British ambassador to Cambodia. He invited me to dinner at his residence during a visit there. Out of the airport and on our way to where we were going to live, the prospect did not improve either. We passed street sellers with their carts and tilly lanterns peddling basic food, smelly cuttlefish, bamboo rice, mangoes and melons. That first night did not make things any better. Bombarded by mosquitoes galore, I awoke the following morning to find I was smothered in mosquito bites, knuckles, knees, feet and face in particular. I counted well over 100. Many lizards running up and down the walls and across the ceiling were kept busy day and night. No one had told us that we would share our bedrooms with families of miniature geckos. The real geckos clung under the eaves on the outside, breaking the silence of their night with their unmistakable call. Only 15 months, I thought. Vientiane was a rather sleepy capital city. At that time it had perhaps 100,000 inhabitants, but increasing daily as tribal people, displaced from their villages by the war, arrived. The traffic was light, with no buses, few taxis, and many samlors, the three-wheeled tricycles in which the passengers are seated behind the muscular cyclist. There were three sets of traffic lights, lots of dust along the street, and rather smelly open drains that bred mosquitoes. Many of the streets were lined with flame trees, and older houses from the French colonial era added charm. The city sits on the outside of a bend in the massive Mekong River, with Thailand on the other bank. In the dry season, the river retreats to the Thai bank, revealing extensive sandbanks, and when in flood, the raging waters are formidable, rising 10 meters or more and transporting many kinds of flotsam. The ever-present backdrop in these years was the Vietnam War, which spilled over into Laos. This added much intrigue, while prompting many questions about the rightness of the war, the suffering and plight of the many who fled the fighting, and the unfolding human tragedy. Into this mix, we inject the role of the fledgling church and its future. Our primary role at Lao National Radio was to teach electronics to budding Lao technicians and engineers. It was part of the commitment of the British government to the Royal Lao government under Colombo Plan Aid. We also got involved in installation work, especially at the transmitter site, 6 kilometres out of town, which housed both medium wave and shortwave transmitters that would cover the whole country. We worked alongside BBC and Marconi engineers and one or two advisers, a rather motley crew. There were also some JOCV Japanese volunteers. I especially remember Mr. Hayashi, who put on a rather quaint face when trying to find his English words. Teaching the young Lao was a lot of fun, while giving some insights, too, into their traditional learning style, learning by rote. They seemed to think they could learn electronics simply by memorising various formulae. Part of our orientation included a visit to the school's recording studio, also part of the British Aid programme. I well remember going there and being introduced to the studio operator. He was happy to take out a 78 RPM record and put it on the turntable for us to hear. "See here," he said, "the good news of Jesus Christ." The label on the record was La Bonne Nouvelle, a production of Gospel Recordings. They had made recordings from their basic set of scripts in many of the minority languages of Laos, but also in the Lao language. The story of Noah and the Ark was one of the most popular. We also needed to adapt to the Lao culture and attend the various ceremonies, which involved, among other things, tying strings on our wrists. The Basi, as it was known, was conducted whenever people travelled, got married, had a baby. Thus it was that Chris and I were welcomed upon our arrival. It was conducted, I later learned, by a spirit medium who invoked the spirits. Was this really Buddhism, I was wondering? On seeing the strings on my wrists, the people in church were horrified and told me to take them off. So, not wanting to cause any offence, I did.